Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to another episode of the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here and spending some time with me and our special guests for this show. But before we get too far into what we're going to talk about today, I want a special thank you to all of you watching, of course, and listening in. And if you have missed some past episodes, I'm not sure what episode number this is. I think we're up in like the 70s or something by now. It's been all remarkable and so much fun to bring them to you. But if you've missed any, you can find them all out there where you find your podcast. So I use Spotify, others use Google. I believe it might be on iTunes, not totally sure. They are difficult to actually get podcasts on. Other than that, you should find it pretty much in any platform. Just go ahead and search FSHD podcast or FSHD Society radio show. Those kind of keywords should get you to us. And always, always grateful. Also, check out everything going on, news, notes, etc., which we'll talk more in detail about at the end of the episode. Visit fshdsociety.org. Today, we're going to talk about a certain subject that I can speak directly to because we're going to talk about adoption. I was adopted, me, my brother, and sister, all three of us, which really had nothing to do with FSHD in my life. I wasn't diagnosed till I was 40, so my parents did not know that I had the disease or I had anything for that matter. They just wanted to adopt a child. They wanted to adopt three. And that's what they did. And they achieved their life mission, creating a family using that way. And I'm personally very grateful for that. But it also leads to this other side of adoption, conversation when it relates to FSHD. And those that are maybe thinking about planning a family, whatever your family dynamic is, it might be something that has crossed your mind. How do we go about doing it? What are the pros or cons? Do you even get in that kind of conversation with it? What are some of those questions that maybe you didn't think to ask each other? And maybe some of the people that are here today are going to do that. Maybe help you kind of think of it from a different perspective. So today we're going to bring in Deb, Mary, and Jim all together in a big, four of us. So we'll try not to probably talk all over each other, but we each of them have something to do with adoption choice and FSHD. So we'll kind of go around the room or the screen, so to speak, if you're watching along with us. Why don't we start with Deb? Deb, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from and a little bit of your background?
Sure. I'm originally from New Hampshire, southern New Hampshire. I live in outside of Frederick, Maryland now, and that's about an hour outside of D.C. and an hour outside of Baltimore. What else can I tell you?
You do have FSHD. Is that right?
I do.
Right. I could tell by your shirt, which I absolutely love. Yeah.
I know. I've been around in these circles. I'm going to date myself a little bit here. So I was diagnosed about age 10 or 11. So that was like right around 1978. So I've lived with it for a long time. It turns out my father had it. He knew something was wrong. Went to many doctors, didn't get diagnosed until after I was diagnosed. I think I got very lucky. I just had a very observant pediatrician. I started showing signs about five or six is when my parents first noticed it. And, I got diagnosed very early. There are times I wish that I had that. I wish I had had that period of not knowing.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, I remember you talking about, you know, you went in to the doctor, one person, one way, thinking one way, and you came out another.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll circle back to this because it's part of my adoption story is FSH was always part of my life as far back as I can remember. And so as far back as I can remember thinking about a family, I knew I wanted to be a mom. I couldn't envision life without having children in my life. It was so important to me. And as far back, you know, as I can remember, even in my teens, I wanted to adopt. I knew that that was the right path to motherhood for me.
That's interesting. I mean, to feel that pull to do that path, to have that path forward as a motherhood, you know, at that young of an age, that's interesting.
Yeah. And again, maybe I'm dating myself. I mean, my career was very important to me. I had a really great career, lots of other things in my life, but motherhood was just top, really, really important to me.
Wow. So. And then Mary and Jim, welcome also for, coming to the show and spending some time with us a little bit and talking in this subject that for some might be difficult to talk about. So I don't want it to be forgotten. This is a little bit courageous here that, you know, you three have kind of put yourself on the front here. This is not, for some reason, maybe we'll talk about that too. It's not always easy or comfortable for those to talk about adoption in regards to FSHD. So welcome, guys. Mary, Jim, why don't you do the same as Deb, you know, introduce yourself. Where are you guys from?
Okay. Hi, I'm Mary Howard.
I'm the one with FSHD, so.
Mary. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. So I'm from Carroll County, Maryland. We actually live in Carroll County, Maryland still. Mm-hmm. And Jim and I met in 98. And I'm sorry, 89.
Okay.
Did that the opposite way. in 89. And we found out a year before we got married. Mm. FSHD. We got married in 1992. We decided to start a family in Carroll County. I worked in Towson. Jim worked in Fort Meade area, and we kind of just, all right, it seems like he's in Columbia, I'm in Owings Mills, let's just go back to the Carroll County area.
Yeah.
Our area.
So. And then being from around there, obviously you're comfortable with creating a family in that community, found a good spot, right? And comfort. It's kind of same with me too. I grew up where I am, you know, living now with two kids. So I get it, right? Sometimes the best place is where you are, right? Just stay close. So when you guys both met and you were starting dating and so forth and engagement in that process, FSHD was not on the radar then?
Well, I'll go ahead and give my story then. You know, similar to Deb, the FSHD part of it. Live with Mary, obviously, in Carroll County, originally from northeastern Pennsylvania, Wilkes-Barre area. I was diagnosed at age 25. Which was 1990. I was a weightlifter. Originally started with, I noticeably overhead presses on my right side were more difficult than on my left side. That progressed pretty quickly to where I couldn't put my right arm over my head any longer. Went to at least a dozen doctors, orthopedics and so forth. None of them giving me a very good answer. None of which I believed. Finally had a friend who said, why don't you go see my primary care? He's a pretty smart guy. So I went to see him and he was actually, you know, humble enough to say, I have no idea what's wrong with you, but I think you need to see somebody at a university level, which he sent me to the University of Maryland. He was still thinking orthopedics. So he sent me to an orthopedic at the University of Maryland, but that was the key to get into, you know, where people that are up on research know rare diseases. The orthopedic recognized it as something he thought was systemic, rather than local to my shoulder. He sent me to a very good neurologist at the University of Maryland who within about 5 or 10 minutes said, I believe you have FSHD muscular dystrophy. And turns out, you know, he was correct. No genetic testing for it at that time, not until that didn't come around until 2010 or sometime after 2010.
Yeah.
But they did the biopsy and the biopsy came back as well. We can't tell for sure. We have no way of knowing. In fact, at that time, they only suspected it was on chromosome 4, deletion or not deletion, but actually, a deletion or a non-repetitive sequence issue. But they couldn't even pinpoint where on chromosome 4 yet, other than that was the suspect chromosome. Yeah. So the biopsy kind of looked, we kind of see holes in the fibers that kind of indicate a degenerative muscular disease. And based on the symptoms, it looks like FSHD. And it was described to me at the time as if you had to pick a muscular dystrophy, this is the one you would pick, which, you know, isn't great to hear. But, for me, it's been fairly slowly progressing. I guess I could probably look back to high school and say there were kind of signs. Like, I was a trumpet player, and my lip would tire long before other trumpet players. But of course, you're not going to go to a doctor for that. But it's been fairly slowly progressing, which is the case in a lot of people. Had issues with my left shoulder, wear AFOs to go outside with shoes, the foot drop issue. So it's kind of a typical path, maybe. I don't know, but seems to be fairly common. Common progression of the disease. That's my FSHD story. I'm a computer scientist, which works out really good because I can work from home and things like that. I don't have to really drive to go to work. Don't mind driving, but don't really like driving far distances with the AFOs. It's just, I always leave 5 or 10 car lengths between me and the next person because just extra cautious when I'm driving. Still a safe driver by all means, but that sort of thing. So, the choice of profession worked out really nicely. That was long, I chose to be a computer scientist long before I knew it was going to work out, that, it wasn't anything physical. And eventually as things progressed with the internet, something you didn't even have to leave the house for, which was very nice.
Right.
So that's my FSHD story. The adoption came up and why we're having this discussion is, there would be different programs you would go in sponsored by the FSHD Society, kind of, updates and so forth, new research and ways of forming a family planning. And quite often adoption was just either not mentioned or just giving a very short blurb, as opposed to something like embryo testing for pre-implantation, which, that wasn't around in the 1990s, but it's not something that would ever be anything Mary and I would have considered anyway. I mentioned to June from the FSHD Society that, I emailed her and said, we really don't ever hear much about adoption. We should. It's clearly an option. It's a good option, but it's not given nearly as much side as kind of the scientific side of family planning. So that's how that was the kind of the precursor for having this program. June got in touch with you saying this looks like a good segment, and you got in touch with me and Deb and my wife, and here we are.
Yeah, well, you helped orchestrate a lot of that though, Jim. So I do appreciate that, like getting all of you guys together. This has been, I think it's become more than even June hoped, that we would get this kind of input. Why do you think, and this maybe is a question for any of you to answer, but why do you think that it is a subject that wasn't really covered strongly as an option through either FSHD Society or even other communities of FSHD?
I'm not quite sure of that, but the people that would be brought in to speak of the of the topics were far more versed. Again, I'm calling it the scientific side, the kind of, I'm tired of keep saying pre-testing of embryos. I don't know what the right words are that. So when I mentioned the scientific point of view, it's the genetic testing of the embryos and planting the one that doesn't have it, have the defect. So I think perhaps an adoption is a whole, there's a lot to it. It's not just, you don't just, here's a child and would you like the child? There's, you go to, I kind of describe it as everything the government would want you to do, want a birthing family to do if they could control birth. Making sure that you are a proper parent, will be a proper parent, make sure you have a house, make sure the house is safe. Every way that you can be screened, you are screened, mm-hmm. which, certainly would, they would want, like to do for,
It's intrusive. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's a long process. There's a lot to it. And I just don't think maybe the family planners are well-versed in that because it's normally a social worker. It's mostly social workers that get involved in that. And they could certainly be invited to talk about it and probably should be. Talk about that as an option because again, we're all fairly old here. So our adoption experience is, 20 plus years old.
Yeah.
So okay. I'm sure it's changed. So it would be good to get, more modern, more up to date information on what the current process is for adoption. I'm sure a lot of it hasn't changed as far as the, you know, that your home is checked out and your background is checked out and so forth. I'm sure none of that has changed, but where you can adopt from, countries that you can adopt from, domestic versus international as a whole, you know, you could have a whole program on, you know, just the logistics of adoption.
Right. And I didn't want to make this necessarily like the how-to, more like...
Exactly, yeah, right. And we couldn't answer that anyway because it's our experience is so old.
So
right.
Different. And I just wanted to make sure that people were attuned to more of that. If it's an emotional decision, you know, how you decided of your own choice of how you came to that conclusion, and really specifically kind of questions you asked yourselves about it. And then, of course, maybe a little bit of the process, as in like, well, when should someone get started if they're going to look at it, in your opinion, you know, that being an option and so forth. So what were, you know, Deb, you kind of talked about it when you were a teenager. You know, you said, I was really thinking about being a mother and I knew this was going to kind of the way I was going to go at it. Did FSHD have to do with that decision at such a young age because you knew it being in your family so early on?
Absolutely. Certainly, if I hadn't had FSH, I don't know that I would have adopted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But once I found out, you know, and I really did understand, even in my teens, the kind of the idea of, you know, I had a 50-50 chance of passing it on. Mm-hmm. And I had plenty of people in my life say to me, oh, but it would be different for your child because you'd know, like, you know, like I'm sure a lot of people that were diagnosed young, there were times in my childhood that were really hard, that I couldn't do things, that I had, you know, a gym teacher that would yell at me and tell me I was being lazy because I couldn't run or I couldn't, you know, do my pull-ups on the president's physical fitness test.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
You know? And so of course, I want to say it's such a personal decision. Mm-hmm. You know, it really, obviously, it's one of the most personal decisions you can make. For me, I knew I would have a hard time knowing that I had muscular dystrophy, mm-hmm, if I had passed it on.
Yeah.
And that was a decision I knew I wouldn't be comfortable with. At the time, as Jim mentioned, you know, there wasn't a whole lot that they could do for pre-testing. And I knew that even if they could, that wasn't a route that was comfortable for me. So I was very clear early on that I wanted to adopt. I was married. My husband and I got married in 1990. And it was pretty quickly after that, I was like, okay, let's get going here. I'm ready to adopt. I think I moved a little faster than he was ready for. Mm-hmm. My neurologist at the time, I think they, you know, again, from that science background, they want to offer everything that they can. So they asked me to meet with a genetics counselor. And that was, you know, before we had genetic testing. So it was just to really understand the likelihood of passing this on. And so I did that. And then my husband and I started, I look back at pictures, it was late 1994. Okay. We made the decision finally to start the paperwork process. And early in 1995, we were matched with a young girl in Lithuania, mm-hmm, actually. And she had a cleft lip and palate. I knew that I did have a desire to adopt a child that had some kind of physical special needs, if it was something that I could manage, given my limitations. So we were matched with a little girl with a cleft lip and palate, and were all ready to go. Felt very, very attached to her. And we unfortunately found out that she was too sick to be adopted. So we kind of stepped back for a few months. And I'm sure some of that is similar to what parents go through if you lose a pregnancy. It was a mourning period. Mm-hmm. And we waited a few months, and then of course I was like, okay, I'm ready to go again. Let's start this process again. And again, I'm dating myself, because what happened then was, you know, this was 1995. We chose to go through to adopt through Russia. Mm-hmm. And the contact in Russia would send a VHS tape back and with the children that were available for adoption. And because we were matched with a girl the first time, we were thinking we were going to adopt another girl. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that the girls on this VHS tape were at the end of the tape, and the boys were, you had to get through the boys' videos before you got to the girls. So we had been in my, I talked with my son when I wanted to make sure he was comfortable with me doing this.
Yeah.
I told him this story, and he's like, I hadn't heard that before. Hmm. So anyway, my husband and I go in, we're thinking that we're going to adopt another girl. And the woman at the adoption agency is fast forwarding through the boys to get to the girls. And so on, you know, fast forward speed, I see this beautiful boy. And I don't know.
That said, stop, right? You're like, hey, wait a minute.
I really did. I said, stop. And I said, that's my son.
Wow.
So I knew right then that I was somehow meant to be connected with this child.
Hmm. That is wild. Wow.
And it wasn't easy. So I'm going to show this. I know.
Please.
I got the okay. So this was the very first picture that we saw. And this is my son at 9 months. This is a caregiver from
Oh my goodness.
He was in an orphanage in Russia. So that's my beautiful son.
Yeah, look at that.
Really felt connected. Wow. And Russia unfortunately put a moratorium in place. Oh. And that lasted for you know, again, we were all ready to go.
Yeah.
Russia as a country said, wait, hold on. And we really, we did a lot of paperwork, got friends and family to write in and pushed really hard. Mm. And when things opened up again, actually, we were already over in Moscow when we finally got the okay that adoptions could start again. So
how long was that period?
So I have in my notes, it was April of 95 when I first saw him, first got his picture, and we were connected. And we adopted in February of 96. February 6th of 96, it was finalized.
That's amazing. Wow. That must have been heart-wrenching. Because your reaction and the way you told the story, obviously very emotional to see his eyes, see his face.
Yeah.
Screen, and then to go through that process just for it to stall out. Did you have any doubts that it was going to happen at all?
I think every once in a while, but I think if you talk to people that knew me at that time, I was so determined that was my child. I would do whatever I needed to do to get to my child.
Right. Wow. Spoken like a true mother.
So the bond can be that strong. Mm-hmm. But yet I also want to share that, you know, back then, you know, this is, again, like Jim said, this is 30 years ago. So there's a lot that's changed. But 30 years ago, we weren't talking about, attachment challenges and other things that you really need to be addressed. And so I think on the one hand, I can say he was my son. I would do anything to get to him. Mm. I wish I had also been more aware of some of the challenges with attachment, especially for children coming out of orphanages and in certain places in Eastern Europe. So there's both.
Yeah. How about Mary and Jim, you hear that story, and you probably heard it before, maybe directly from Deb in the past, but Is there anything that kind of walks alongside some of those same things that happened with Deb, that happened with your situation when you started your adoption process?
Yes. Yes and no. We're a little different since, and I think Deb can address this as a woman. I think you were kind of getting to that before, Steve, that, you know, the desire to have a family, I think, is stronger in women. Mm-hmm. I think it's just naturally that way. I think that's just how God made us, is stronger. So I knew I wanted to have a family too. There was just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, Jim had kind of said to me before we got married, "Do you still want to get married, knowing I have this, knowing that I don't know, you know, what we're going to do with our family?" And I said, "Yeah, and we're going to have a family." You know, however that may be, I was fine with that. I just knew that I always wanted to, as a little girl, as Deb was saying, I always wanted to birth a child. I've got three older sisters. I have nieces and nephews. I've seen my sister go through it. So that piece for me was a little tough to get my head around, that I wanted to just trust in whatever God gave us. But Jim had what Deb had, was that I just couldn't accept that. To be able to have a child that would, that I knew that I could, not have had that with. So,
right. And other people make the opposite decision, knowing they have the disease and still.
And they do. Right. So right.
It's so personal. Yeah.
It is. And that's why I wanted to touch on that, because of what Deb said, it is, it's a very personal decision. It's not something that I think should be rushed into, that, you know, we were married for 5 years before we decided that this is what we were going to do. We were going to go ahead and adopt. Once we started, though, it was, you know, as Deb put it, you can just feel like you're going to be a mother soon. It's almost like you're pregnant and that you're going through the process of all of the feelings and all of the things that happen during that process. And then when you get to see, I'll call it the sonogram, that we had a video also sent to us, and the connection, it's the same.
Wow.
It is. It's just the same. You automatically feel that connection. You see it in their eyes, you feel it. And then when you go and you hold them for the first time, and it's just an awesome, awesome experience. So I don't, you know, it is difficult, but I want to make sure people know that it is such a loving experience that happens, very similar, I feel like, too, because I've had sisters who have birthed children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is still the call to be a parent. You mentioned, and Mary, I do agree with you. I think that women have that instinctual urge, I guess, or want to be a parent. Sometimes I think a little sooner, most times, than a male. I remember I was still probably playing catch up, and my wife was already pregnant, you know?
Yeah.
and I remember reading in like expected dad kind of book. And there was almost like a relief point. It said, you know, dad, don't be alarmed if you're not quite in, you know, where she is yet. She got a 9-month head start, or in your case, maybe even earlier. Cause I agree with that. It was even earlier, cause my wife was talking, you know, kids and how many, and this, and she knew I was adopted. She said, "Well, what if something happens? Are you fine with adoption?" I'm like, "Absolutely, I am. I mean, hello, I'm a product. It works, you know." So I was like, "Yeah." So those conversations were happening, but she always brought it up. So there's no question she had a head start. Yeah, you know,
5 years into the marriage, and when Mary brought it up, I was like, "Already?"
Yeah, I think I might have said the same thing, Jim. Yeah, I was like, "Wait a minute, we're having fun." Yeah, no, yeah. But it is, I mean, that is, and I'm so glad that you both shared what that experience was, that connection. I think, and I'm going to play some devil's advocate a little bit, you know, with some of these questions, because, you know, I'm not sure from, I only know my perspective of things. So, you know, I think there might be parents to be out there that are contemplating, okay, I want to have a family, not sure which route to go. And one of the things that they might choose or not choose adoption is because they're worried they won't get that same connection. You know, and I've kind of heard, not people outwardly say it, but within their answers of talking about adoption, you know, that's kind of, and it's more like a, not a selfish feeling. It's more like, I don't want to deprive the child of that connection and this and that. You know, it's, you know, they are not thinking of it from a selfish point of view, thinking of it, oh, you know, I hate to go through all that, and then it doesn't connect. So Mary and Jim and Deb, you guys say it the opposite. The connection is strong as ever.
So
whether the child has my DNA or not, it's insignificant.
Right.
It's
right.
Meaningless to me. But I don't want them to have my DNA.
Right. That's the reason.
It's defective.
That's the reason. Yes. Yeah.
I do want to share that even though there was that connection,
mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's been easy.
Right. Right.
And we had a very rough road for a number of years. And I'm so incredibly proud of my son for where he is today, because he really made the most of opportunities and overcoming a very, very difficult start. And so I would say, I think that connection, you could question it whether you choose a path through adoption or your own biological child. I've talked to a number of friends that they didn't feel that connection that they were hoping for or anticipating when they hold their own child, their own biological child. But I will share that, you know, we did have a very rough road at times with my son, to the point where, you know, it was at its worst, it was my only crisis of faith in my life, literally on my knees, wondering, why did I come through this experience of FSH, lead me to adoption, go through all that we went through to bring him home, to then at the time I felt like I had failed. And all I can say is, you know, hang on. If somebody, you know, chooses that path, actually any path to parenthood when it gets rough, just hold on, because you will get through. And again, you know, we came out the other side, and my son is now, he'll be 29 in a few months, and he's thriving. He's gone back to law school. He's, you know, he's just an amazing human being.
That's amazing. Mary and Jimmy, do you want to speak to that too? Connection, you know, with the kids, obviously it's not easy. I even find as I've gotten older, as an adult, you know, with my parents and siblings, that it has to be a conscious effort. It's weird. It's so hard for me to describe. I don't feel this immediate, like, hey, I should call. I should contact. It's nothing internal. It's like an external thought. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll see my wife instinctively go, I should really contact my brother. I haven't talked to him for a while. And I'll go, oh yeah, it's been a while for me. Didn't even occur to me. It's like, whoops. So, and I kind of put that on because I almost feel like maybe because there wasn't that DNA tie. I don't know. I'm just making that up. I'm just not as good of a connector. But how about
for our family was very supportive, accepting. Mm-hmm. There was just never an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, there's various paths to adoption, particularly internationally. Right. When we adopted, there were several main places people were adopting from: China, Korea, and Asia, Eastern European, Russia, some of the Eastern European countries. So it can be more challenging. A lot of people were adopting from China and Korea, and you know that can be that was actually part of the social work we had to go through. Was had to go through some classes with some people that were adopting from Korea. And they would put you in they would make up some situations where they would give you, you're out in public and someone's mentioning, why don't your children look like you? We never had that. My son actually looks like me.
That's cool.
There are people who didn't know we were adopted, and they would look at Alex and say, I very much see you.
Yeah.
I see him in your face. And, you know, sometimes I'd say something, sometimes I wouldn't. But right. We never had to experience that. But that's another part of adoption where it can be more challenging based on mm-hmm. where you choose to adopt from. But for us, our family was very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Never an issue.
Yeah. How about you, Deb? Did you have any, you know, beyond just your circle, you said you and your husband at the time made that choice and so forth. Beyond that, was there, you know, any kind of reluctance or apprehension from other family members of you doing that and choosing adoption?
No, my family was incredibly supportive. My coworkers mm-hmm. were incredibly supportive. In fact, they went through all of those ups and downs, you know, with the first match that we had, they had just had a shower for me.
That's cool. Yeah.
They had a shower for me and then it didn't work out. And so everybody, I felt like I had this great community that supported me while I grieved, because it did feel like, I don't know.
A loss. It is a loss.
It was a loss. You know, it really not the same as, you know, losing a child that you have with you, but it was, I grieved it, that loss mm-hmm. for a while. Neighbors were incredibly supportive. In fact, when we finally got the okay to travel to Moscow, even before we knew exactly when things were going to open up, we had had in January of 96, we had had a very bad snowstorm and our little cul-de-sac was not plowed out. And we had neighbors that went out there with shovels, like, they're going to the airport, they're going to get to Dulles, and they're like helping us to make sure. So, you know, when we came home, again, we lived on this little cul-de-sac and almost all the families had young kids, and our son was just a part of that. It was just, it was great. Cool. Yeah.
How about that experience, Mary and Jim, the point where you bring them home? Can you kind of describe that and maybe even back up a little bit of what was that journey to go?
Sure. Yeah. We actually traveled twice. So we have a son and a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The first time was definitely different than the second time. Our first time experience was somewhat similar to Deb's. We had a hold off. We were, you know, we thought we were going to travel. We didn't travel. It wasn't as long of a period of a time mm-hmm. that we had to wait. And then we did go. And then we had actually the judge that didn't like us, and we didn't know if we were actually going to get our son while we were there. So that was very nerve wracking. But
I wouldn't say he didn't like. I think he was new to the adoption process.
Yeah,
I think he was sincere. I think he was sincerely.
I didn't think he liked us because we said no. He was going to make us wait for more paperwork from
right.
And once the child leaves the country, they're not getting the child back. So I think he was sincerely looking out in the best interest of the child and just wanted more assurance that yes, the child's best place is with
right. Marina. Okay.
But the nice thing about the people that were with us allowed us actually to take him before the next court date. So it assured me, and I guess that's the difference between how Jim felt about it and how I felt about it, right? You know, it's that difference of this is my child and what are you telling me? I can't have my child now type of thing. But the agency was like, oh, no, you're getting your child. We're going to make sure that this happens. And before your court date, he's going to be living with you.
Wow.
So that was a relief for me, have that. But again, it's all the different situations. But the support was the same with me as Deb had. I had a baby shower at my work. I had my brother-in-law, because our crib was an issue. It came wrong. It came late. It had to be put together. He came over and did it for us. You know, so it's those
big
big support of family, big support of friends, the neighbors kind of similar. We didn't have as many neighbors in our cul-de-sac. We also were in a cul-de-sac.
But a lot of kids the same age.
But a lot of kids the same age, you know, especially with our second adoption. With our daughter, though, it was 9/11. We should have been in Russia. We were supposed to travel on the 10th.
Wow.
And then 9/11 happened. And our mothers would have been with our son and we would have been in Russia. So wow. That was actually, we felt a God thing that we didn't travel. Even though I was devastated. Again, this is my daughter. Why can't I go get my daughter, bring her home? So these things, you know, life happens and things occur. I think very similar to a birth family, you know, a family that's birthing their child. These things occur. You have support, luckily, and that means a lot.
Yeah.
And the trips were nice. I mean, we also adopted from Russia. You fly into Moscow and spend a little time there before you actually go off to your area of Russia that you're adopting from. And we adopted from Murmansk region, which is very, very far north within the Arctic Circle. And that was a really cool experience. You know, we're there when the sun didn't set until 10 o'clock at night and, you know, rose at 4 o'clock. So, you know, we didn't get to see the full summer 24 hours of sun, which would have been cool. But yeah, people were wonderful, but, you know, wonderful people that we met and stayed with and, you know, lived with and helped us through the process. It was a really nice experience.
How long were you there from the time you arrived to the time you came back with your daughter?
My son was longer. We were almost there for the full month of April. We left on your birthday, wasn't it?
We didn't
get back till almost May because of the delay in the court because the judge wanted more.
Because of the judge.
But it was nice. Like Mary said, we got to have our son with us because he was from a different part of Murmansk, not the actual Murmansk proper region, but a little copper town, you know, further south where, you know, it's
only drivable.
Yeah. So you can only get there by driving. So we're a good 100 miles away from where his baby home was, but they still let us take him. You know.
Wow. And then,
we got to bond with him pretty well in those 3 weeks, which was nice because he was very 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 shy of men because there weren't a whole lot of men in the baby home. So I was different to him.
Interesting.
You
know, yeah.
Right away from him. And he got to know me, and we were fun. So. It was kind of nice having that time there before we brought
it home. So it was just the two of us with him compared to coming home and family and stuff. So, you know, sometimes that allowed us to have that time.
Mm-hmm.
But our daughter was quick. We actually were less than 14 days.
Yeah, that was a very
fast. Wow, that was a lot faster.
I think it was 12 days. Yeah, we were.
Which was closer to normal because we traveled with another couple on our first trip, which was nice because everything was new. So we had another American couple with us who was also adopting from the same region. But they had a much faster process. They were out and we were still there another week and a half or so.
Right. And they were out. But I think the thing with our daughter that was kind of interesting was that, again, we think it was just meant to be. We got news that they were going to make you travel twice. Mm. So we were in this was in 2000.
So to expand on that, you would go, now there is no more travel to adoption for Russia, as far as I know.
Yeah. So I heard.
Anyway, with the goings on in the world, but they changed the process so that you would make it a two-trip process. You would go there, meet the child, make sure that this is a child you really are going to take home, go back home, and then in a few months go and have your court proceedings, which I couldn't imagine doing that. That's
our son here and only having, you know, our parents or we're older.
Yeah,
still,
our moms stayed here.
It didn't seem like this might be what we were supposed to be doing, you know, so we questioned that. A few days later, Jim got a phone call and a note that we have a daughter, if we would, you know, be interested in doing this, getting the paperwork and everything. And we were able to travel once. So, you know, again, I think, you know, sometimes
into the same region, we got to choose the same region. So there kind of be some, even though the children
some
biologically connected, there is some connection in their origins.
Mm, that's So then there too. I mean, I know I would, when I was, I can't remember what age I was, but I was pretty young enough to understand that I was adopted. I was just told, and it made sense because I looked nothing like my brother, a little bit like my sister, and kind of a little bit like my parents. But, you know, I think in the back of your mind, you wonder why that is. And so I have it explained for me so quickly and in such a matter of fact way, like, well, this is just how it went. Oh, okay. And I just went on with my life. It wasn't like this big orchestrated ordeal or anything in my story, and made sense to me, and life continued forward. Did you end up, or when did you end up telling kind of your kids about the adoption process, to the fact that they were adopted and so forth?
We never really, we always kind of told them they were from Russia. So, yeah. And that's part of the social work that you go through, mm-hmm. is they sort of prepare you for that. And say,
we had a book of pictures that they asked us to do, kind of a family starting book, you know, that nice. They would have in their room that they could see, you know, mm-hmm. look at any time they want, that had the pictures of how their family, how our family came to be.
Gotcha.
So it was, like Jim said, it was like a natural thing. We just, yeah. it wasn't a time that we sat down and said, mm-hmm. by the way.
It was just always there.
Yeah. It was always there. I mean, our Alex was 3.5. Oh, I said his name again. It was 3.5 when we went to get his sister. And he had questions that I was just shocked at 3.5-year-old. But again, I just think it was just a natural thing because it was always an open situation, open talk about it, you know.
Right.
Wasn't something, you know, hidden. It wasn't something elaborated one, though.
Yeah.
It was just, this is how our family came to be.
Right.
And, you know, other people have different life stories, you know, your cousins and stuff. And
mm-hmm. and this was ours, right. And this is yours.
Our story. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Dem?
Similar. You know, my son was 19 months when he came mm-hmm. home. So he was mm-hmm. old enough to remember that. And it was always just a part of his story. Part of our story, our family story. And I agree. I was thinking that earlier, that time that my husband and I had with our son, we were only there 2 weeks. But that week that we had with him was just such an important week to bond. A really, really special time. And we were lucky. We were, go from Moscow to where my son was. And we were in talking with the head of the orphanage, and, you know, you're trying to make yourself, you know, sound like you know what you're doing, and you have absolutely no clue what it's going to be like to be a parent. You know, you're trying to make a good impression. And all of a sudden the door opened and someone walked in with my son. And I hope I wasn't rude. I just stopped talking with her and I got down on the floor. And my son was very shy and reserved, but he did come and sit on my lap. And after a bit of that, we weren't supposed to take him that day. We thought it was going to be another 4 or 5 days. But the head of the adoption said, no, this family needs to be together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they let us take him. So, but yeah, there was never a time that we felt like we had to share this news with my son, because he always knew. As he got older, we don't have that many details of his background, but as he got older, we, you know, gave him more and more of that information, that everything that we had. And, I believe he will go back someday. He's talked about it for the last few years. And so I think he will. And so we've been very, again, very open, mm-hmm. sharing what we know, and we support him. We have been cautious. I'm lucky. I have a couple of coworkers from Russia. And so they cautioned me to caution him to wait. And I'm, you know, now given the state of the world, I'm glad he hasn't gone back yet. I do worry about that, being from Russia, that right. with he holds dual citizenship. So as a young man, he could go over, and even though he's an American citizen, it could be hard for him to come back.
Right.
So
right.
So the cautious, you know, mom is like, you know,
oh, sure.
I want you to do this and I'll support you. Just, I want you to be safe and I want you to come.
Time it right. Yeah, correct. It would be a little sticky, I think, for him to tackle that. I agree. That would be a little tough.
Yeah.
But I can imagine that your mom instincts are full fire at that point.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense. Yeah. How about then, in regards to, you know, having FSHD, you chose adoption. That was part of the equation of the decision. But adoption or natural birth, there's still the business of helping raise a child with FSHD, you know, that you personally have. And you know, how about those hurdles or adaptions that you may or may not had to do as you raise these small people to adults, right, as they get older?
Yeah, so I remember, you know, needing to, when he first got home, needing to lift him up to put him in the car seat and thinking, oh my goodness, this is really hard. And I always felt just very grateful that whenever I would reach a point that I didn't think I could physically do something anymore, he would reach a new milestone where he could climb up into the car seat on his own. So all I had to do was buckle him in.
Yeah.
You know, I remember in the middle of a tantrum one time, you know, somehow managing to, you know, get arms and legs and pick him up and carry him up to the second floor to put him in his room. And, you know, like,
how do you do that?
Yeah. Can't even imagine doing that now. one thing that I did want to say, and this didn't factor into my decision earlier, but now as I look back and I've heard other women talk about it, there is that that aspect of a number of women have shared that going through a pregnancy and giving birth progresses their FSH. So, you know, up until the last few years, I was still pretty mobile, still did pretty well. In thinking about this conversation the last few days, I realized, you know, I was pretty lucky that I got through, you know, all of his teenage years, and I was still, you know, pretty mobile.
Yeah.
And when he was young, I was able to, you know, get down on the floor and play with him on the floor and do kinder music and go swimming. And, you know, I was able to do all that. I'm glad I had those years of being pretty active with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And looking back now, I guess I'm a little bit grateful that I didn't choose a path that progressed FSH faster.
Yeah. That's a good point. Because it might've been a different situation. Right. How about you, Jim and Mary?
My disease is very slowly progressing. So actually, most people didn't even know I had FSHD until I was 50 and my lower leg started to weaken and needed the AFOs. So, you know, obviously that's something I was very good at hiding the disease.
Yeah.
I just didn't choose to talk about it. I, you know, just rather just go about my life and do what I can do. And I was quite strong, to be honest, until about 50. And, you know, 50 is a lot of things change, whether you have FSHD or not.
Right.
So having, you know, that sort of degenerative disease doesn't make old age fun. Nonetheless, my children didn't know I had FSHD until I was 50 and my legs weakened. And I had explained, what are these funky things you need in your shoes to help you to walk? So no, there weren't a whole lot of challenges in raising the kids. Other than things I would try to avoid doing because, we would still swim, but, you know, I didn't like to be places where I'd have to take my shirt off because it's obvious
there's
something quite right there. If my friends would ask me to play golf, I knew I can't play golf, so I'd make up some excuse. But most things I could still do. So, it wasn't until my 50s until I slowed down quite a bit. So, challenges of kids. You know, I was lucky enough to still be able to coach my son's Little League team. T-ball team. So, I got to do a lot of the things most dads would want to do. So that really wasn't a big issue for us.
That's good. Yeah. Because I think that's that crosses some people's minds, you know, okay, great, we're going this route for the reasons of FSHD, but the child still comes, you still have FSHD. You know, that part of the equation doesn't change whichever path you go. Be prepared for whatever that may be, right? And make your own decisions. I guess, and that kind of leads up then to kind of my final question to ask you all, and you can kind of answer each on your own, you know, and that's the advice you'd give, or maybe it's more phrased of what questions make sure that you don't forget to ask yourself for those people that are on the crossroads of adoption, starting a family route, natural way of birth, that route. What are either the advice or, like I said, maybe question don't forget to ask yourself, because maybe you guys didn't think of it in the midst of it, you know, until you were in the midst of it?
I think we thought it out pretty well. But just keep in mind that, you know, like the phrase goes, adoption is always an option. Mm-hmm. It's not presented often enough as it should. So, you know, at least give it a choice. Put it in front on the table as one of the potential paths. And, you know, there are social, I know something like Catholic Charities I believe they still do adoption advice. They're still involved with the adoption process, but we went through Catholic Charities as our adoption, our path to adoption, and the social mm-hmm. workers and guiding us along the route. So they're still on. There's I'm sure there's other social agencies that can help, but you know, definitely give it a choice.
Yeah, but they also had something when we were looking at it that was interesting, where you can go and you can see all the different agencies available. And I'm sure they still have that. I mean, we were in Silver Spring again. This was, like Deb said, almost 30 years ago. So, but they had like a workshop where you go and you can find out information about each different agency and where they deal with. And that kind of gives you more of a full view of the process. I myself like that instead of calling each agency and seeing. So I would think that is still available and it can be Googled.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
To be able to see, well, when are they doing that workshop? And throughout the course of the year, I think it was twice that they did that. So again, making adoption an option, as Jim said, and being able to work through it together to see what, you know, and they'll give you that when you go to the workshop, like the pros and cons and you know, how your family can become a family unit in multiple different ways.
Good advice. Deb, how about you?
Yeah, so we did go through a private adoption agency. And so from that, I would just say, make sure you work with a reputable agency. Once you decide to adopt, you're in a somewhat vulnerable position, and you just want to make sure you're working with a reputable company or organization. But the other thing that I really wanted to share that came up this week as I was thinking about this conversation was, I've shared with you that, you know, I saw his picture. I was so determined. There was this connection. It never occurred to me that I might not be able to love him enough to heal some of his hurts. And I think, obviously, in my situation, that's, you know, things that happened to him in those early months that I couldn't love him enough to heal those completely. I think that happens to parents in any situation, even with biological children, that your children just go through experiences that you can't always help them through. You can support them and you can love them through that. But that was really humbling for me. I went in, you know, full speed ahead and was just thinking about bringing home this child. And I didn't think about, you know, that it could get difficult.
Yeah. So kind of just try to keep your mind open, that your determination, don't let it cloud that, hey, this could be tough at times. It sounds like, though, if you have the right support, the right family members with you on this journey, that must help a lot. Surround yourself with those positive people and support. And I think that's great advice if you're choosing, you know, adoption path or natural birth path. You know, support is always going to help, always going to help. And the difficulties of having FSHD is already just that. It's extremely difficult, worse for some than others, but still, you know, something you have to deal with on top of taking on being a parent. And I think one of you mentioned, I think maybe it was Deb, right? I was trying to impress them. Like, I knew what I was doing. Like, yes, I'm all set and I'm prepared. Right? And I think we all think that until they hand you the child, you're like, well, we'll see ya. And you're like, oh, well, you know. And they're like, okay, I guess this is for real now. So we have to figure this out. Yeah, we have to figure this out. Well, thank you guys for spending some time with us, opening up our minds to that other possibility of growing a family, creating a family through the path of adoption. As I mentioned earlier, I can speak that it was a great path for my parents on both sides, the natural parent that made that choice and the adopted parents, my parents, to say yes, and we'd like him. And it worked out for me, and I know that it's working out for all of you too. So thanks for opening that topic up with us a little bit, sharing your lives with us, and what can be a difficult and touchy subject for some, and being courageous enough to raise your hand and say, I would like to talk about this and make sure that people are talking about it. So thanks, Deb, Mary, Jim. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's our topic for this show. A little bit of talking adoption. It's another option. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll close up shop and we'll dive into the next parts of the show. We'll talk a little bit about news, notes, etc. And close up shop. You're listening to FSHD Society Radio Show. The FSHD Radio Podcast is brought to you by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum Therapeutics is a proud sponsor of the FSHD Radio Podcast. The team at Fulcrum is working to develop innovative therapies targeting the root causes of genetic diseases, including FSHD. As the only company with a drug in clinical stage development for FSHD, Fulcrum is proud to support programs that are helping more people learn about FSHD and the critical need for research that can lead to new treatments. For information and updates about Fulcrum, visit their website at fulcrumtx.com. You can also connect with them on LinkedIn or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks for being here and spending some time with me on the FSHD Society Radio Show. A special thank you to Deb, Jim, and Mary for joining us talking about adoption and that it is an option. And it's an option for all, but in particularly with FSHD, we all know different hurdles, different struggles, different things we have to tackle, decisions, passing it on, 50-50% chance. And then, of course, when you once have the child via adoption or natural birth, what is going to happen to the body if you have natural birth? And we talked about that, how it can actually increase FSHD's pronunciation in our bodies. And then, of course, or how it is affecting your body. And then there's helping raise a child or raising a child, perhaps even on your own. And how do you do that, navigate that with FSHD and its progression of that disease? The want, the desire to be a parent is so strong in so many. How do we navigate the proper choice so that it is not just a blindsided choice of I want, and it is something that you want to, not regret or wonder, or making sure you're making the right choice, educating yourselves on the right choices. And I hope that offered that to you today. Just a different perspective. Another little bit of information to put into your mind, into your thoughts, if this is where you are in your life. And if you're not, I hope you found it interesting nonetheless, a different perspective of the disease that maybe not all of us have thought about. It is interesting, without a question, to talk about. And me being a product of adoption, sure glad that it went that route for me and worked out. But that's not for everybody. And that's very much clear was the main message that all three brought to us was, it needs to be your individual choice. It's not about judgment. It's not about right or wrong. It's right for you or wrong for you. That's really what it comes down to. And if you're in a relationship, is it the right decision for both of you? And I think it just has to be talked about all the way through. Don't miss those questions. And hopefully this raised some to help you navigate that decision in your life. The other thing I wanted to mention, and honestly, Deb is the person that brought it up before we hit record on the show. And this show is being recorded on the 5th of March. Just yesterday on the 4th, Judith Heumann passed away. Those that don't know, and I was educated, thank you to Deb as our guest on the show, to let us know that she passed away and that she was an American disability rights activist, one of the most powerful ones in our history. And she was recognized internationally as a leader in the disability community and making so many changes in how things are handled when it comes to the rights of people with disabilities. So just want to take a moment to mention that and to honor that person, Judith Heumann, for helping us all. And thank you, Deb, for bringing it up, because it would have went right under my radar before we would even hit record and the moment would have passed. So kind of a moment to kind of say thank you to Judith Heumann for all she's done in her life to improving others. And I thank you all for listening to the show, being here on this episode, and hope to see you more in episodes to come. Don't forget, there's so many ways you can get in touch with our community, getting right with or getting fit with FSHD and other types of groups that you can be involved with. I want you to make sure that you are part of that community. Visit fshdsociety.org to do so. And look forward to bringing another episode to you next month. So stay tuned of who that may be or whom that may be. And once again, if you want to find past episodes, visit us on Spotify and other places you find your podcasts and search FSHD Society Radio Show. Thank you again all for listening and watching. We'll see you next time. Take care.